Hello. Welcome to the Honest Wargamer Stat Center for Age of Sigmar with the, I'm your host Rob, and the Owen Jackson, my other co-host and one of the best human beings in the world. Owen, how are you? Are you well?
Yeah, I'm okay. I don't feel like one of the best human beings in the world today. A little bit sort of fuzzy. Yeah, I'm not sure if I've got anything interesting to say, but hopefully we're going to talk about Warhammer, aren't we? Which is always fun. But yeah, I'm good. How are you today, sir? You well?
So, you know, I'm really great. Thanks very much for asking. Very, very excited about talking about the stats. Looking at Australia events, we're going to look at Brizhammer. One of my favorite things always to do, because those guys do not give a fuck about. They like to piss into hurricanes. They ain't got a fucking. They don't, like. They are not scared, is all I'm ever going to say. And excited about that. Other than that, generally, I mean, pretty excited. Bellicor, Broken Realms, we saw announced yesterday. That's exciting. Now I don't know if it's Bellicor, Broken Realms next. If it, is it Teclis next? Are we getting the Lumineth Rue Lords coming out? Like, who knows? What's the order? I'm confused and I'm excited. It feels very much like my sex life.
Wow. real talk right there. Real talk. Yeah, that's pretty exciting. I mean, I must say that I think that Bellicor video was probably one of the most low budget reveal videos that they've ever produced. But, you know, whatever. It doesn't really matter.
You didn't like the artwork for it?
I liked it, but it was pretty basic. After the sort of reveals that they have with the Cursed City, it was a bit of a wah-wah, but whatever. If the rules are good, the book's good, people are happy, that's cool. That was just a little side note. I know that you like talking about the production quality of...
I do. I could talk about them all day. Like, fascinated. Yeah, like, again, underwhelmed to a degree. But, like, I think there's loads... But yeah, loads to break down. Whole nother show. Let's do that. I think that would be good. Still better than just the minis, though. I agree with that. I think that's fair. Yeah. and also, hello to everyone in the Twitch chat. Thanks to Pizza Guardian, Eric Sorbin, Tristan, Haken, MJ Pegasus. Love seeing you here, Nikos. AOS Pete's asking me a question. He's going to answer it super quick. Is how do we sign up for Super Secret pre-sale list for the TSN Arena tournament? May have made up, but I don't want to miss out. I promise you, as soon as I'm able to put it out there into the world, I will put it out there into the world. Inferno Storm, thanks for resubscribing. I'm just making sure, like, I sort it out. Like, do we use Eventbrite? Like, I want it to be, like, quite professional. Does that make sense? So instead of it just being, like, some PayPal you send some money to or something, and some sort of, like, weird list on a forum, just make it a proper thing. So I'm just going through that process, Owen. Which is nice. Also, deciding on artwork. That's always you. This is one of your things as well. Like, event names for Age of Sigmar can be a bit. You took a pretty classic one, Hammer Time. It's pretty classic. That's a good one.
Yeah, I think I like them to be snappy. A TO that, you know, I'm sure a lot of people based in the UK would have been to Chris Tomlin's events, and I always rate him because he always comes up with like snappy one-liners. Blackout, Brotherhood, you know, I think it sounds good. It's a bit like the conversation that was had the other day about Warhammer logos with like skulls and flames and dice. I think that there are similar tropes with the naming of tournaments, right? There's a lot of things that are either in flames, broken, or in blood, that kind of thing. So yeah, excuse me. So yes, I think making it look a bit different. I think that even though it's Warhammer, I think that there are opportunities to have it branded or presented in a way that's different to the kind of fantasy trope, which makes it, yeah, I don't know. I'm rambling. I can't see you, Rob. This is weird. Everyone knows, I can't see Rob. I'm literally talking to a fucking Word document at the moment, which is a bit weird. It's really cool.
Welcome to lockdown 2021. At this point, you should be used to that. Yeah, my camera's not working, so apologies, everyone. It is for you guys, but not for Owen. Not sure why. One of my problems to solve today. However, problems to solve today. Let's talk about it. Desert Sketch, thanks for the offer. And Ziggy, of course, this is the Owen Jackson. We booked him by luring him in with the option of some Honest Wargamer branded socks at some point. That's the point.
Steady. Don't steal my IP, Rob. You know, that's the first bit of Hammer Time merch that's coming out. It's some socks. Watch this face.
uh, American Sport Trophies all seem to be named after people. So rather than tournament name, where do we get the Owen Jackson Cup? Great question. Great question. And also, can I co-opt your name, Owen? I might just do random people from the community. Like, I'm like the MJ Pegasus Cup. And everyone would be like, what the fuck?
We could do like, yeah, we could do like a figurine of you, Rob, for a specific trophy at the Super Series.
Trophies is also a really important thing. I think probably the coolest trophies I've seen to date, the ones that you get from Bobo, which are big weapons, which look super cool, 3D printed weapons. I think that looks really awesome. Of course, Bloodshed in the Shire had some hilarious trophies as well. I think all of those are actually done by Dark Fantastic Mills, who's a wonderful, wonderful person and like a guy to produce stuff for you. So you can go check him out. So that's why the organization is taking a little bit longer. I'm not just announcing an event and you're not just going to get a tin cup. I'm like, okay. Are all of the trophies going to be Nathan Prescott's head? Like, that's the real question that we need to talk about.
I quite like Diadrin's suggestion of the jet water bowl. That's quite a poignant one.
That would be lovely. Yeah.
Yeah, for a best army based around with more animals in it than sort of humans or other beings. That'd be good. So, you know, if you take your gore fist with all gore grunters, you've probably got a good chance of picking up the what was it called? The jet water bowl. Yeah, there we go.
the special award.
Yeah.
All right. Talking about special awards, we probably should talk about the meta in Australia. It was a great segue, really happy with that. So this weekend over in Brisbane, Brizhammer, now a great group of people over in Queensland who organised this event. Some absolutely stellar individuals attended the event and organised the event, so shout out to those guys. I think they had 45 players play at the Brizhammer event, and it was attended by like a whole cavalcade of like famous people. Which was super cool. But before we get onto that, should we talk about the fucky meta, Owen?
I mean, looking at the event, I'm not sure. I didn't have an opportunity to get hold of the pack. I tried to earlier, but couldn't get it. But there seemed to be the guy. This one was called Brizhammer Indestructible. So it's a Irresistible Force, which is the same place in Brisbane that Simon Hall's put on a few events. And this one was, yeah, Brizhammer Indestructible. It looks from their website like they're doing four events, each one based around a different Grand Alliance. So this one obviously is the destruction one, and that was reflected in the sort of armies that people brought. Yeah, Gloomspike Gits were the top represented faction with five armies. And then
here's the breakdown for everyone. Keep going, Owen. Sorry.
And then you've got Iron Jaws with four, Night Haunt with four, and Eidneth Deepkin with four. So obviously Deepkin are a strong army.
Nighthorn also being in there is also like wild. Like, that's wild talk. Now, obviously, there's a lot to break down from whenever you look at an Australian event. That, like, you have to ask yourself like a few questions. Why does the meta look like that? And I got to say that there's like two key points. Number one, you always think about price point really over in Australia. Like, it's just outrageously more expensive to collect there than it is here. Also, the Australian community have got like a real hard on, which I think is amazing for hobby. Like, they super, super care about the hobby. Armies are always presented super lovely, like almost all the time. Loads and loads of effort. But probably the predominant factor that you generally find over in Australia, in my opinion, is the fact that they're just belligerently like happy to take whatever they want. Like, there's a real, you know, we talk about it a lot here in England and other places around the world. Obviously, it makes sense. If you want to win a tournament, it makes sense to take your Seraphon list. But that isn't really how, like, the kind of, like, the mental attitude kind of works from everyone who I've met there. And they're like, nah, fuck you. Like, I'm going to do this with this. Like, and that kind of, like, and sometimes you have a couple of those people in a community. Sometimes you have those, like, or you have them all over the world in different communities. But generally, the whole community pretty much plays like that, which is quite fun. So you end up with, like, some really, really funny lists. But you also end up with some, like, a really, I think, really fun events. CanCon's still, like, one of my favorite events to ever attend. The people are phenomenal. And the attitude is also really positive as well, I find. So I think they've just produced a good attitude, is what I'm trying to say, as a community.
Yeah, and also I think that much like in most of the world, the world isn't binary. It's not black and white. It's not like, oh, you can take this army and have fun, but you're going to lose all your games, or you take this busted or a very strong army and you're going to win all your games. You know, there's this massive gray area in the middle. So I really like the description that you've given there. I think I would love playing Warhammer at some Australian events because taking an army which isn't necessarily seen as being, you know, the top army, but then trying to extract the best set of results out of that book, or an interesting build, or just an interesting idea, and then by the sounds of it, then having hobby which sort of leans into that as well. Yeah, it's cool, right? I don't. I think if you've got like lots of people just playing super strong stuff, and then lots of people playing, you know, the mid tier or the lower stuff, then you can, you always, the same stuff is always going to bubble to the top. Whereas I like the idea of people taking books which are considered to be not fantastic, and you know, you've got some good results. You've got 3-2s for Nighthaunt. You've got somebody up in the top 10 with Beasts of Chaos and Khorne, and it's good for everybody because you know, you might play armies that you don't see very often if everyone is just bringing, you know, super powerful filth, right?
Yeah, like I mean, they're all valid, like all valid ways to play. I think what's nice about that is you generally end up with like it's also expensive. It's also something always you need to look at as well. Like it's expensive in Australia to collect. I mean, it's expensive anywhere, but it's very expensive. And like you know, chasing stuff around. And I think that kind of like that correlation between expense, taking your time to make your armies look really nice, and then just playing them a lot, you generally end up with this kind of like messy matter, which is super fun. Like, and again, a great place to go play. So yeah.
I'll put a link to the ladder cabbage just put there. One thing on the cost issue, because I know the cost comes up a lot. I did see that they were 55 Aussie dollars for a ticket, which is just over 30 quid. So they might pay a lot for the models, but 30 quid for a weekend of Warhammer sounds pretty damn good value. And like I looked at photos of the venue and nicely spaced out, really good terrain, and it seemed really well organized. So props to the guys putting on Brizhammer. I think it's Chris Stratford is the name on Tabletop TO. So props there. I mean, recognizing that, you know, it's an expensive hobby, and getting the pricing around that point. I mean, yeah, you wouldn't get you 30, you might pay 30 quid for a one day in the UK, mightn't you? If you get lunch and stuff. So yeah, fair play.
Yeah. I don't think food is included. Like the guys over in Queensland generally are there for the community. That's kind of the main purpose of what they're there for. And when you see the list of names, it's a group of people who do know each other. So it's a really, really big community. Like, so you've also got Brizhammer team event, which like before COVID was like pushing like 120. There were some singles events that were pushing 100, 120 as well. It's a huge part of like, so like it's a very, very densely populated player base, and there's a bunch of people there who play. So like it's a super cool place to go play. Warhammer, and one of my plans, me and Nathan were planning pre-COVID actually to fly over there, and I think we're just going to play. And so hopefully that comes back around again, which would be cool. Talking about the ladder, before we get to talk about the top three, Owen, can I just talk about some standouts for me? Obviously, you talked about Geordie Flett, with his Beast of Chaos in eighth. I also want to shout out Ken as well, my man Ken, running 2 and 3 with Beasts of Chaos as well. That's still great results. Super good results, I think, and we should applaud them. Also, organizer of CanCon, Clinto, 3 and 2 with his OCR Bone Reapers. That's not bad. That's not bad. Yeah, you can't be upset with that. Also, Wes Graham, banging it out 3 and 2 as well with his Gargants. I still think that's a great shout. I think that's still really impressive. Like trying to shout out the ones, even though it's not made it in the top. I still think that 3 and 2 is a. I think 3 and 2 is a good result with Gargants. I think like if you started doing 4 and 1, I'd start like getting flags out and waving them around. I think would be like my. I don't know about you, but how do you feel about Gargants? Like, do you feel 3 and 2 is? Because I feel 3 and 2 is the ceiling, personally.
Yeah, it is definitely I wouldn't say the ceiling. It's probably where they're going to end up sitting, but a lot of good players are able to take them to a 4-1. I mean, it is looking at it. Wes's list is take a tribe again, and it's the two larges, and then a unit of three man crushers and a unit of and three singles. I think it's Gargants operate on certain missions really, really well, and then other missions they really suffer. So I think it is very pack dependent. So yeah, you'll probably end up 3-2. I think one thing with Clint, he did a me, which is 3-0 on day one, and then lost two games on the Sunday. So that's pretty tough. But I think you'd, like you say, I think you'd still be happy with 3-2 with Bone Reapers in the sort of current with what's currently strong. But yeah. I think the one that stands out for me. Got a shout out, Seth Schneider. He and Geordie Flett tied their fifth game. So he ended up with 3 wins, 1 draw, and a loss. In seventh with Korn, with 4 Bloodthirsters.
It's quite That's a nice amazing.
List. Yeah, it's a nice list. It's a mixture of Tyrants and Murder Hosts. So if I'm not mistaken, he's a 3-drop. Yeah, 3-drop, double battalion, 4 units of Flesh Hounds, 2 Boom Thirsters, 2 6-inch pile in Unfettered Furies, and then a couple of small heroes. So,
I actually don't think there's a country that likes Korn more, actually, than Australia, generally. Whenever I'm over there, they're like, yeah, but what about Korn? And you're like, is that a conversation that we're having? And then I went there that one time and Korn won the whole event. And I was like, fuck me.
That is what's happening, Rob.
That is what's happening. I really probably should shut up. I think that's an excellent play for Korn to do so well. I mean, Beast Chaos in 8th is also brilliant, ultimately. Some other kind of standouts that I wanted to bring up was my man Mick, shout out to him, got engaged to Gemma. So super happy about that, Michael Crichton. And he came in, so he went 2-0-2. Yeah, so 2-2. So like there was a draw in there as well. Like with Gits, now you might laugh, but that was the best performing Gits in at 21st place. I still think that that's genuinely impressive. Like Gits is a hard army into the general meta to play at the moment. It's an old book now compared to a lot of the other stuff. It hasn't been aggressively repointed at any point to bring stuff in line. Lots of it doesn't work inherently well with itself, it's just, and maybe some of the builds that were really good at, which was some like sort of kind of a shooting castle, which was weird, orientated from magic, has been neutered by all the magic doms in the world. So 21st is still brilliant, in my opinion.
Yeah. Looking at his list as well, it's not leaning into Jaws of Mork or anything. It's pretty classic Gits. So a couple of Endless Spells, Loon Boss on Magna Squigs with the Clammy Calcium -1 to hit. He's got Scraggy in there, 40 shooters, 40 stabbers, some Squig Herds, some Boingrots, some Rock Guts, some Loon Smashers. He's basically got a bit of everything. So that would be really fun army to face as well, you know, both types of Trogoths, 2 bricks of 40 lads that can maybe come back. That's solid. Yeah, getting 2 wins and a draw in that field is really good.
I'd like to shout out, now this is just for me, this is me and Tim Davies. Now it might only be one win, it might be only 1 of 5, yeah, but
it's bloody Legion of Asgore, isn't it?
It doesn't matter, Owen. They're on the charts there. Tim's smashing it still. 1 win. We're smashing it, brother. It's not 0-5. It's 1-4. That is a submarine for the next mission, the next tournament we go to. We got this, Legion of Asgore. Let's go. Really happy with Tim doing super well.
I'm not happy with him because I've just seen and his one win was against Korn. Damn it!
Let's go, Tim. Anyway, really happy with that. Right, so let's move into the winner's circle and that top bracket. We'll talk about Corey in first place in a moment. In the top bracket, so 4 and 1s, Dave Kerr with Slaves to Darkness, we'll talk about that in a minute. Zach Lear with Demons of Zeench. Hayden, a big love to Elf Bro with his Iron Jaws. Patrick Carter with his Lumineth Realm Lords. And Paul Jackson with his Maggotkin and Nurgle. So like a nice spread of unsurprising kind of like 4 and 1s, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, we talked about the types of armies that were brought, and I think it does go to the strength of those books. And even though it was a diverse meta, perhaps with some stuff that you wouldn't expect to see maybe on TTS or maybe in a UK event, but you know, there was one Lumineth and they went 4-1. There was one Zeench and they went 4-1. There was one Daughters of Cain and they won the event. And it was only the two Seraphon players that we, you know, that didn't then threaten sort of or get those four ones that perhaps you would expect them to. So I think it's fun to have a conversation about all the interesting stuff that's brought. And then, but then when you do focus down onto those four ones, it is the kind of armies that you would expect to be doing well. That would be my kind of headline just from having a little look through. Even with low representation, Tzeentch, Slaves to Darkness, Lumineth, all coming up. And then two Plague Touchs in that list, Rob. Both slightly different builds, but a couple of Plague Touched in there, which are super strong still, obviously.
Yep. And it's just those secondary points that changing up the ordering of those. So they were all in that 4-1 bracket. Plague Touch still very, very good, very strong. But interestingly, seeing it either in a Maggotkin build or seeing it inside a Slaves to Darkness build. And we know Dave has been running his Slaves to Darkness Knights of the Empty Throne list actually for a few events because we've talked about them for the past couple of times. So posting consistent results there and actually only losing to Corey. So should we talk about Corey in first place first? It's probably like Daughters of Cain, first place. Now, I think massive shout out to the organizers again, to Chris. Absolutely the correct decision. With his organization of the event. Yes, New Daughters of Cain was out. Yes, New Sinestra was out. But they've got a rule in place. Not until the FAQ is out can you play it at the event. I think that's absolutely the right call. Owen, as we go into like real world events, I don't know what you like. And also on TTS generally, have you got any sort of vibe on that?
Yeah, that's what we do. Nothing can be used before it's had an FAQ. I think the only thing on that was maybe this was prior to having a really cogent policy on it. I think maybe I let Sons of Behemoth in without an FAQ. But yeah, it stops. I mean, I was at Heat 1 when pre-FAQ Tzeentch just went 1-2-3 and a lot of people had a bad time playing them. So if we can avoid that kind of those feel bads or people manipulating rules, I think yeah, so solid there from Chris to put that in place. And it gave Corey the opportunity to give his beautiful Corey's Gambit list the swan song that it deserved, right? One last rollout, one last Laoshan, one last mirror dance. Come on, dance together. Oh, I bet it was really romantic actually. Little Marathi and the Shadow Queen dancing like they're not going to be able to dance again. Although Mirror Dance is still really good, to be fair. It'd be really interesting. I'm really looking forward to seeing what Corey does or how he does when it changes. I didn't realize until I started looking at the lists and everything and doing a bit of my research that obviously the decision was made to make it, you know, old book or pre-FAQ, let's say. So it will be interesting to see how this list transitions because it's just unfair
on the player base as well. Like if you like, because normally people plan events like this months in advance, weeks if not months, right, in advance. So you're planning on going, you've got your army, and then because obviously there's no roadmap from Games Workshop, so you don't know that your book's about to completely change in like a splash release. At the beginning of the month you could be like, right, I'm taking this book. End of the month you'd be like, oh, my book is completely different. Like it just doesn't, that doesn't feel right. So I think that's a great decision, something I'm going to be putting into events that I run. I think it's 100% the right way to do it. I'd like to see more events do it and not pander to. There's some people who are like, I want to take the new stuff. It's like, well, just wait, be a grown up. So I think the reason I want to talk about it is because I think it's super worth talking about and it's super worth reinforcing for communities around the world. Like, just be like that's what I think is the best decision. And it was great seeing this done here. So I think that's great. Owen, the the Queen's Gambit list. We've talked about it before. Calibron, Daughters of Cain list, so old Calibron. Bloodrat Medusa, the Shadow Queen, and Marathi, obviously. Ten Sisters of Slaughter. Three times, and then two units of Cainite Shadow Stonkers, 20 Bloodstalkers. So those are the shooters. Lakwan, the Soul Seeker, the Burning Head, and an extra command point. We've had a breakdown of how this list works before, but it's a good old teleport and then you Lakwan Marathi, which is pretty fascinating. Then you do a good old mirror dance, and then you just wang it all into your opponent on the first turn. It's pretty rough, right?
Yeah, I've played, I think everyone needs to be ready to be shot at a lot by 20 Bloodstalkers, whether it's in Calibron, whether it's in, whether it's two units of 10, or whether it's in, you know, Hagnar, or regardless of which kind of coven or whatever they're in, getting prepared to be double turned and shot at four times is something that we all need to do as players of Warhammer Age of Sigmar, because I think there's going to be a lot of that. Marathi Kane, Holy Within 24 is just such a kind of, you know, Bloodstoker, Holy Within 8, he says hello, but no, Holy Within 24 is pretty forgiving in terms of your positioning and stuff. So yeah, being able to get that, those 24 inch bow shots off in the hero phase and then shooting again, that's where this list wins, right? Marathi's great and she's a bully. And there's lots of tricks to put things in the right positions. And the Shadow Stalkers are absolutely amazing. But I think the game is won and lost by 20 Bloodstalkers being where they need to be and killing what they need to kill, right?
Yeah, 100%. I think, like, it's a lot of output. It's a lot of output. It's 560 points. And the issue is Marathi's so fast. It's an unkillable piece. I spoke to my friend Jacob yesterday about this. We had like a conversation for an hour about it. Still not sure how I feel about Marathi. When I'm doing coverage, I'm like, this is a unique piece. This is so cool. This is going to bully the board. Like, I mean, it's the ultimate bully. The ultimate bully. Even Gotrek dies. Like, this is the ultimate bully piece in that you can't ignore it. Like, because it's just enough output that you can't ignore it. You can't stop it. Like, it's a world of hurt. And it's an uncontrollable world of hurt. And I still don't know how I feel about an unkillable piece. I feel like that breaks such a core mechanic that it's rough. But it's here to stay. So, I think maybe doing coverage is more exciting than when I have to face it. And playing with it, there's a gamut. Playing with it, a delight. Coverage, great. Playing against it, no, sir.
Yeah, it's... you were going to ask me if I had any thoughts. Sorry, I cut into you then.
It's okay, we got it.
I've written a few Lumineth lists. I really like the look of Kel'Thnar, Marathi retreating and charging. I think that, especially now, I mean, the irony of Heartrender having a pip of rend removed is just, it's not lost on me. But I do think that the Shadow Queen needs Mindraiser now to really, really slap. And the fact that that's obviously on a 7 with the +1 and with the magic doms around, I think that'll keep her in check. I mean, the old thing with her is just to try and ignore her as much as you can, but I know it is difficult. I think that these kind of lists, maybe if you haven't played it, then you worry about her, and then in the Shadow Stalkers shoot everything off and you're like, oh shit, that was the real threat. So she's like an amazing distraction piece in that sense. But yeah, every time you write a list and suddenly you're 600 points down, I mean, not like Alariel 600 points down, but still you're 600 points down and then you've got to write a 1400 point list to do the rest of the, you know, to win the game with. I don't know. I know that certain players who are very experienced with Daughters of Cain have been writing a lot of lists without her. I'd like to see where it settles. The kind of general wisdom seems to be that she makes it into most lists. But then you know what it's like as a book gets played more and more and more, certain things become, you know, more or less optimal. I don't know. Yeah. I don't think I've got anything really clear and concise to say on the matter. She is an amazing.
I think that's the point, right? That's where my feelings lie on it. Like when you play, like, it kind of like the reason this comes back to a conversation that we used to talk about in competitive Age of Sigmar when we would talk about old Big Boy Nagash back in the day. Yeah, normally he was so many points in an army that you would just try and kill everything around Nagash, and then he could really be only one piece. And ultimately, he probably didn't do enough for the points value he was at. Like, but then it was harder to get him cheaper. Those big pieces are always controversial, and they're always like a lot of conversation. I think the best point that I've seen in the chat is that it's nice that it's restricted to a singular army. Like, it's a singular army who has this playstyle and does this thing. I think that's fascinating. It's still like it's just a good conversation because I think from competitive play, when you do look at a list like this and you do come up against Marathi Kane, and you will come up against a lot of Marathi Kanes in the future in TTS or on the tabletop, and you got to ask yourself, how do I deal with it? In this commentator's humble opinion, great question.
Well, I'm glad you say that, but I don't think the metrics changed at all since, I mean, we saw there was an excellent game, Steve Curtis versus Peter at the LGT from your coverage, which yes. was Marathi. And like, I remember that coverage and you were literally like, okay, it's the same old Marathi thing. Just try and take three wounds off her in the magic phase and in the hero phase or the shooting phase, and then just ignore her and go and kill the rest of the army. And I don't think that's changed, right? She hasn't changed in her the way in which she locks into.
Well, apart from there are two now. I think that's a major issue for me. Like, there are two. Like, and not a major issue as in, oh, this is a negative. That's not where I'm at. Like, from a competitive sense, if I was playing against it, there are two. I could get blocked up by this Marathi here, and there's the other Marathi. Like, but I think probably that's right. The probably is do a wound and then run away and try and hit the other stuff. But I mean, that unit of Bloodstalkers, that's 40 wounds right there, like to go and hit, which you have to avoid. But like, if you do look at the list, it's got those Bloodstalkers, which are big brick, and then it's got the Sisters of Slaughter there, like not the most survived, 5-up save, and the Shadow Stonkers. And I've got to say, the fact that you got Marathi Kane in there at 600 points, and then two fragile-ish 100 point units in those Shadow Stonkers. Fascinating, actually, because there's so much mobility in this list. Like, it's so playable. You can make so many decisions with the army. I see, like, a lot of Shadow Stalkers actually just deployed at the back of the board, so they're just like, I'm not in the game, but I'm going to teleport at some point. Like, I see that a lot. I think that there's loads to unpack there, and I think it's super fun. And I know, obviously, this is one of the older lists, but Shadow Stalkers are still in there, Marathi's still in there, and Calibron Command Trait is still in there as well. Command Ability is still in there. So there's still the ability to do lists very similar to this, and I think it'll be really fascinating to see where this book goes and how this plays on the tabletop, especially into like other large models. Like, I think that's always kind of a good conversation. How does this play into Nagash? How does this play into Alariel? And how does it play into like units that can do so much output, like Salamanders and Skinks and like even Wardens? And they're like, well, I can't do all of that to this model this turn. And I think that's a really good conversation. So it's a fun, I think I'm probably settled on it. It's fun and engaging because it's a problem you can never probably solve.
Yeah, the two things I would say to wrap it would essentially be, you know, there's really good ways that Daughters can get low drop now. So people are running like Viperic Guard to get them down to like 2-3 drops. So that's tough. And I think the one thing that makes these Daughters lists really strong, whether you're shooting, which is probably in the current meta, it's better, or whether you're fighting in the hero phase, perhaps with a different unit, the fact that Marathi Kane, obviously she is killable, but her command ability is more important, I think, for these kind of lists than the output of the Shadow Queen. So the fact that you can't kill the piece that's allowing the Stalkers to shoot in the hero phase is that needs sort of, you know, we need to respect that. Because normally, for example, say, I don't know, you were running a Slaughter Queen on foot who was allowing everything to fight in the combat phase. In the past, you know, 5-wound hero with a whatever, a 5-up or a 6-up save. Like, in a world of global mortal wounds and, you know, very scalpel-like applied damage, you can take out the key piece in an army if you can get to it. There's ways to get to those key pieces, whereas, you know, the Daughters of Kane players know that they've got a good few turns where they can always be shooting or always be fighting in the combat phase. And then effectively you're turning a 560-point unit into a 1,120-point unit every turn. Every turn your army is 25% bigger on, if you're using that as a weird bit of maths, but yeah, basically that works, right? Every turn, if you're able to maximize, like to get double the output from that unit, joy. And the fact that you're projecting power and teleporting around to do it and putting it where you want, get ready for Stalkers. They're going to be everywhere.
They are going to be everywhere, 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 everywhere. Okay, so congratulations to Corey. Again, old book. But Corey smashed with this list. Like, wow, it's been his, like, he's got a hilarious name for it, the Corey Gambit. Like, it's sad to see it go away, but there we go. They've, like, it's all done now, and he's won the event. So smashing work there, Corey. Congratulations. Absolutely killing the game before it got updated. So in second place, Dave Kerr. Now, Dave's run a Knights of the Empty Throne list, and we've seen this list several times from Dave and obviously a load of people as well. Knights of the Empty Throne, Varangard, he's got that Inescapable Doom and the Grasping Plate, which is no retreat and piling. Good piling from 6 inches. Chaos Lord, Chaos Sorcerer Lord, Chaos Sorcerer Lord, Bellacore, 2x5 Chaos Warriors, 20 Chaos Marauders, 2 units and 9 Untamed Beasts, and a Chaos War Shrine. And that is in the Play Touch Warband. He's taken that 8-fold Doom Sigil as well, which I think was a cool little pick. Owen, you got any thoughts on this?
My only real thoughts are just the fact that he's obviously gone from, he was running some Flamers in there a bit as well. I'm not sure if it was Flamers and Bellacore in the past, but yeah.
I think that we've seen Bellacore come in and Flamers, Flamers go and Bellacore come in.
So he's traded a bit of output and a bit of horde clearing for some more control. But yeah, it's super solid. They've been running around on TTS quite a lot. I do think the way it's settled, I did see a couple of players who've been playing this comment this morning saying, oh, I think the 6 might be the way to go, because you're kind of all in when you take 9 and there's not really much left to play the mission. So by taking just 6, he's got those early game screens, because this is still a 3 or a 4 drop. I think it's a nearly everything is sitting inside the battalion. Then he's got the 2 units of beasts and the umbilical. So it's a 4 drop. The sigil's cute, and he does have, obviously, Bellacore's a caster. He's got plenty of casts to try and get that off. So that gives a +1 attack. It's basically like if stuff dies near it, then you get to your, I think it's your opponent chooses your unit. So your opponent's always choosing the unit that they, you know, like, oh, we're going to give +1 attack to those 5 Chaos Warriors rather than your, you know, inescapable brick of death horses or whatever. But yeah, the sigil's cute. I think the sigil, you have seen that propping up in certain lists, especially with like Archeon, trying to get Archeon a couple more attacks. But yeah, great anti-shooting, you know, all the little heroes are -2 to hit. You know, you can't escape from the unit of 6 Varangard, and you kill yourself while you're trying to get away or trying to kill them. Yeah, it's gross. And it's one of 2 Plague Touches we've got in that 4-1 bracket.
I would say that, like, that Bellacore inclusion, actually, really fun. Like, so Corey ended up beating Dave in his 5th game, actually. To take the win, and they played on Total Conquest. I think one of the interesting things there is that Bellacore play into these large, like, really, like, scary bricks in those 20 Stalkers or even in Marathi, and being able to Bellacore one of those units, I think, is actually really interesting. It'd be interesting to see if Bellacore stays around, because I feel like Bellacore kind of keeps the rest of the player based honest to some degree. Like, you're like, I might have a massive brick, and you're like, what if you come against Bellacore? It's like, oh yeah, like, cause then it's just neutered, right? For a turn because of Bellacore's ability. And I think that's always a really good conversation. Apart from that, the list has, like, not got a lot in. I think that's one of the really kind of standout bits for me. There's units of, very much like we saw with Corey's list as well, like, very fragile. There's 2 units of Untamed Beasts, really cool for trading in the mid game, kind of like early doors. Those 20 Chaos Marauders are great when they're output, but, like, they're not super survivable. And then in that Play Touch Warband. So what's interesting is, obviously, there's loads of output coming from the Knights of the Empty Throne unit. But mainly it's about the opponent hitting itself into what, as we saw, a pretty punchy meta generally. So, like, quite good, ultimately, for this list to play into. Maybe we saw, that's why we saw 2 versions of this. But yeah. Yeah, really, really good. I just wanted to quickly talk about, I forgot to say, Corey's path to victory, actually, Owen, if you don't mind me just quickly saying.
Yeah, of course.
So he beat Dave in the last round, and they played Total Conquest, and these were the battle plans going through. He played against Ryan Hooper in his Big Wild list, in Force in the Hand. He played against Patrick Carter in his Lumineth Realm Lords list, in Blade's Edge, which didn't have Texas in, which I thought was cool. Battle for the Pass was against Matt Daly with his Ineth Deepkin Eels, which is pretty on point eel archetype list. And then round 1 Focal Points versus Eddie Chung and his Iron Jaws. So, like, it wasn't like an easy run. Iron Jaws, Ineth, Lumineth Realm Lords, Big War, and Slaves. Like, it was a pretty competitive run, ultimately, to just get through. So I just thought I'd mention that.
Yeah. One thing I would say, which is in Corey's benefit in terms of that matchup against the Knights of the Empty Throne, if I'm not mistaken, I think they might have played each other for the win at a previous tournament, maybe one of Simon's tournaments, Simon Hall's. Obviously, I'll get corrected on that. But two things to bear in mind. I think Corey can quite nicely get out of the no retreat, because if you can teleport away, then you can get away from the Varangard, so that it does negate the no retreat there. If he's got a unit that's been tagged by them, you can just teleport them away with Calibron, or if it's the Shadow Stalkers that are the screen, then he can teleport them away. And then also, I'd like to know what the chat think on this, but I'm pretty sure that Bellicor stops you moving but doesn't stop you teleporting. So if you wanted to, again, get a unit out of dodge, and he's, I don't think that Bellicor's puppet mastery can work on the Calibron teleport. That would be huge. If you can stop, if he can't stop the Shadow Stalkers moving or his units moving, that's quite big. So that may have come into that matchup. I'm not sure. But yeah. That's a couple of little minor interactions that may have been in Corey's favour for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Right. So everyone in the chat telling you spot on that, Owen. In third place, Zach. So Zach had a Zeench list, Host Duplicitous, and he had Archeon, your boy, Chaos Sorcerer Lord, and Kairos. 2 units of 10 Pink Horrors, 5 Chaos Warriors, Geminids, Prismatic Palisade, and the Umbral Spellpore. So those 3 endless spells there. It doesn't ever look like much, right? 69 wounds, by the way, Zach. Just big love to you. That's obviously perfect. Perfect. But really, it's not. It's really, it's 169 wounds or whatever it is. The additional 80 wounds that you add on for the Pink Horrors as those battleline units. Yeah, really good list. And again, Archeon just proving why he's in there. And Fateweaver with that dominance in the magic phase. Super good list. I think you could take this to any tournament at the minute, and it's really viable, right?
Yeah, it's pretty gross. I do see people do some fun things. I saw somebody the other day doing a HD, and they didn't have Kairos, they had Glutos in there, so that for the -2 to hit, which is quite obnoxious. You see this run in Hosts Arcanum because people like to pre-game move Kairos forward, and then I've actually got a Zeench matchup in the next Tomb Tournament game, and in that bloody Kairos got a 45-inch threat range turn 1 with Gift of Change, which is a horrible spell. I think Archeon is scary, and he is the meat there, but Kairos, like, just make him 420 and it'll make everybody's lives a bit better. he wouldn't be an ally here, but you do see him pop up everywhere because, yeah, Kairos with his ability to rig a dice with the, I think it's called the Oracle of Eternity, his spell, the fact he knows the spells of everyone around him, so he can cast demonic power on Archeon rather than relying on the Chaos Sorcerer Lord. He's wonderful fun, Kairos. Like, I've never run him myself, but I've seen him used so much interesting Slaanesh lists where, you know, when they're wanting to guarantee Slothful Stupor off, you know, through a portal. Like, he's everyone getting shit in the chat now. Leave him alone, Kairos. He's also triple caster over a Lord of Change being a double caster. So yeah. I think I would take if I've never played Zeench, but if I did, I would always find a place for him. So not being able to retreat from Archeon, who's -1 to hit. And then the spell Dom from Kairos. And I believe that you get the rerolls, don't you, in Host Duplicitous?
You do.
Yeah. It's funny. Like, I've written a lot of Khorne lists with Archeon recently. And it's like, okay, you can do similar things and you can put him where you want him to be and he can blow loads of stuff up. But, you know, the difference there between Zeench and Khorne is that... holding my backfield are like 10 Blood Reavers on a 6-up save, and holding the Zeench backfield is 50 wounds in the pinks.
People always forget about the shooting, but like it's also like it's great. The shooting is great on the Pink Horrors, and I'll take that all day. For like if you compare them to like Bliss Barbs at 160, like Pink Horrors win all day long, like forever. Like, and you're paying 60 more points for them, and you're like, yeah, happily. Like, they're so good. They're so good. One of my favorite units, actually. So big shout out to Zach for doing so well there. And then just a couple of shout outs. Hayden came in fourth place with his Bloodtooths, Iron Jaws. He's got that Mega Boss and Mawcrusher, the Double Chanter, and the Shaman. And he's running a 6 and 3 pigs. And he's running some Brutes in an Iron Fist, which is a little bit unconventional. You generally tend to see Ard Boys, not Brutes. Generally.
Yeah, yeah. Leo is currently like feeling a disturbance in the Force somewhere. I know he's moving house today, but Leo's like, what? Brutes? Jesus Christ. Brutes are quicker to paint, though, right? Brutes are quicker to paint.
And it's all about the painting meta. That's really what we're here for. Hayden's a great guy, plays lots of Warhammer, super, super invested in making sure these armies do well. And also those Brutes play super well into a combat kind of like environment, with like if there's not quite as much like super hardcore, like lists. So anyway, yeah, looks a great event, right?
Ultimately. Yeah. I do really like, I just want to put a pin in Hayden's list because it's quite similar to what we saw at the Super Series, I believe. So he's got like the turn one triple threat alpha if he wants to go. And like the prevalent threats that we've talked about in your Seraphon and stuff, they don't like being alpha struck if you've got the opportunity to get in there. So he's got the Mega Boss or Mawcrusher, who's obviously a threat. And he's got that Quick Duff Amulet, which I believe is just a once per game auto teleport, isn't it? So he could teleport the, say, the 6 pigs or 10 brutes. He's also got the great, great big green Hand of Gork, so he can teleport something else. And then one unit's going to be like, for example, the Megaboss on the Mawcrusher is super fast, so he could do the Mighty Destroyer's move with him. So easily you could put 6 pigs, 10 brutes, and a Megaboss on a Mawcrusher into your opponent on turn one, which sounds like a lot of fun. That sounds like a fun way to play Warhammer, doesn't it, Rob?
Agreed. It is fun. If we've got a screen, I'll just laugh at you. If we've got some pre-game move units, I'm like, this is the best fun ever. But yeah.
Well, Hayden obviously smashed it at the weekend and managed to get through that initial screen, didn't he? I think if you do, yeah, it is. I have seen somebody screen off with 40 skinks and then everything else was 6 inches back. And it was like, okay, boys, those orcs are going to obliterate those skinks and then I'm going to mow everything down with Bestilodons. Yeah, it has its, but at the same time, like people, you know, I think that would actually be really solid in teams, that Iron Jaws list. I think you'll see, you do tend to see the IJ sort of alpha lists, those ones that can just bum rush your opponent and pin them in.
I think the double move Mega Boss is always, always, always a threat. Like, I think it like keeps a lot of armies honest. Obviously, you've got like Ghoul Kings on Terrorgeist as well doing the same sort of thing, but like if you come up against the wrong matchup, you can normally screen with the Mega Bosses, and oftentimes, especially of course, this doesn't necessarily have like a lot of screen, sometimes some, you know. But also, let's talk about very quickly those 6 pigs when they get war chanted, woo, they'll blow through everything. Those 6 gore grunters with the war chanter buff is just a terrifying unit, and always will be. And for 320 points is a great unit. 30 wounds, loads of attacks per model, damage too. They're just amazing units. So yeah, really, really good. Great list, great player, great guy, great time had by all over there. This a part of a series of tournaments, you think of it?
Yeah, I think so. Looking at the website for the Brizhammer guys, it looks like, yeah, they've got one more each based around, they're all sort of narratively linked through the different Grand Alliances. So there's one based around, I think it's the Order one next, and then Death, and then I think Chaos is last. I think the dates are TBC. I've just been checking something. There was a comment in the chat and they are right and I am wrong. You don't get the, you can't double teleport because Quick Duff Amulet allows you to hang to Gork for free effectively without casting, but that does mean that you can't then cast it twice. So that was Rabid Bunny 666. Yeah, you can't teleport two units. So yeah, you could teleport one, you could hear a Mighty Destroyers one. The alpha is still real in that list. So but yeah, thanks for picking me up on that.
Good. Yeah, that's it. Well, so the only thing to say for upcoming events is we have one this weekend. So we have the Copenhagen tournament this weekend. So we're going to be doing the list review show on Friday. So it is a TTS event. So we're doing the list review show on Friday, and then on Saturday and Sunday, you'll be able to watch live coverage of the event. And hopefully you'll enjoy it. That's the plan. Join me all weekend for a competitive Age of Sigmar 2-day TTS event. And other encompassing music, which will be super fun. Calling it now, obviously Seraphon will win the event, but other than that, so let's see if they don't, Owen.
They can't win the event, Rob, because I'm not taking Seraphon, so how can they win if I'm
Owen
going...
is playing. Yeah, there's some notable names playing. Owen, you're playing.
That's one to look out for. I think I'm much better at rambling on the internet about Warhammer than actually playing the damn game. But yes, I'm going to play, and I'm taking Khorne because I don't care what my own statistics show. No, it should be super cool. It's Battle of Copenhagen. It's Casper and Sven, who both have been on the stream, I believe, playing. So yeah, they're running it. First 2-day that I'm aware of. So yes, it's I'm excited. There's going to be some good players playing, some interesting stuff, and lots of good coverage from you and the team, hopefully, Rob. Yeah.
Looking forward to it. Looking forward to the list review show a lot, actually, on Friday. I'm hoping for that. We've also got, if you're interested in Age of Sigmar, we've also got a Darren List Diary show on Wednesday. We've also got me and the gang back tonight to talk Age of Sigmar. It's non-stop goodness. All of that coming in March. And we're only, ladies and gentlemen, we're only 19 days away from the Stream Street first birthday. That's right. The 20th. It's a Saturday. So more details on that action-packed event coming soon at some point. But Owen, it's been lovely talking to you today. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Lovely to talk to you. I haven't been able to see you, so visualizing you.
I'm gonna fix it. I promise.
It's okay. Yeah. Here we go. Malky, what's the topic for tonight, Rob? What are we going to be discussing on the show tonight? Thoughts?
There's a load of questions coming out recently because obviously Bellicor's coming out. We're probably going to carry on with the battalions show, which was the plan originally, but I was going to pivot maybe and talk to the boys about doing something a little bit different, but I'll see. Otherwise, I'll keep that in the back pocket in case it gets stolen for another
before you ask me, I'm going to do it anyway. I have actually got a shout out that I've written down.
I'm ready.
Basically, Colonel Cabbage has found the means to create lots of lovely 3D models for us to play with on TTS. So he's been filling in the gaps of things. So we've got like a really nice 3D Bloodthirster, some 3D little characters that I needed. He's done 3D Blight Kings. Not surprisingly, he's done a load of the 3D Beasts of Chaos stuff that wasn't available. But yeah, I just want a big shout out to Cabbage because it's not a slow process rendering these models, but he's making a lot of people happy on the internet, which sounds weird. But yeah, thanks, Charlie. Nice one, mate.
Okay, perfect. Thanks to everyone who subscribed, by the way. Hot Sauce Teddy for resubscribing. Tessa... Ted Casablanca, Inferno Storms, and our newest subscriber, Maxi Taxi Di. That reminds me that anyone who subscribed to Patreon or Twitch last month is actually going in for a prize draw, which I'm doing later today, to win a giant. And then if you are this month a subscriber, there's another miniature to be won. So I'll let you guys know about that. So anyway, loads of love to everyone in the chat. Thank you for being here. Thanks to Owen. Join us again later, 7 p.m. UK time, twitch.tv/TheHonestWarGamer/ get in the chat. Otherwise, no one likes you. That's how I'm ending the show, and it's flawless. Let's go.